About sizes, sorry,
Yeah, sure.
I have a little story. It comes in different episodes. I don't know whether you want to go through it. It's Hilbert's Hotel. You know Hilbert's Hotel, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So it's this hotel numbered 123, or maybe 0123, and it's computer scientists involved, right? And then it's completely full, and then a new guest arrives, right? So what can we do?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our second episode. Hey, folks. Sorry for this little break. Our first season was supported by the Akademie der Wissenschaften in Hamburg. But since this support ran out, we are now looking to crowdfund our little endeavor here. So if you want to chip in and feel particularly generous, feel free to go to buymeacoffee.com/aboutlogic and contribute whatever you would like to. Thanks for your support, and now back to the episode. Of About Logic premises, where we, Torsten and I, just talk a little bit about some notions that might be relevant to follow the interviews with our guests. And there are some great updates. Now we became YouTube partners in some tier, so you can now hype videos, which would help us to reach more people. So feel invited to do so. And of course, always like and comment and subscribe and everything else you can do. So that's great news. Thank you for all the support. We are very happy to grow so quickly and to reach so many people interested in foundations of mathematics, logics, and everything related.
Yes, welcome for me too. This time I'm from a different place. We're actually both in northern Germany today, but not in the same space. So what shall we talk about? I think one topic which came up from time to time is this thing called set theory. So what is, Dennis, as a philosopher, can you tell me a bit more about the history of set theory?
Yeah, sure. I will begin with a statement that you will dislike. Set theory is the foundation of modern mathematics.
How did you get this idea?
Yeah, I mean, Hemkins actually said something more nuanced. Set theory has two roles, right? There is this academic mathematical discipline, set theory, similar to topology, similar to calculus. You can do different things, and you can do set theory, and this is like a proper research field, and you can do large cardinal stuff, or you can do descriptive set theory and whatever. This is the one role of set theory, and the other one is this foundational role. And I mean, I guess it all started, and I mean, you can have different starting points, but a lot of people would say it started with the Zwischenwertsatz, the intermediate value theorem of Bolzano-Weierstrass. So you had, like, if you draw a line of the real numbers, or if you draw all fractions, it looks similar. It just looks like a line, right? Because the fractions are quite dense.
Mm-hmm.
But only in the reals you are guaranteed that a function going from negative to positive, which is continuous, as a zero at some point. And this started like a push towards formalization. And before that, it was more about intuition. And then we made things more rigorous. And one very particular ambitious goal of making things rigorous is what's called logicism. So people like Frege try to reduce all of math only to logic. And as you know, this logicism program somehow failed, and the system of Frege had a contradiction in it. This axiom 5 was problematic. And I mean, if we skip over the details, that the more or less the Russell set is the problem there.
So you don't mention Cantor at all, I noticed.
Yeah, maybe not yet. Maybe I should mention him as well. And I mean, as always, there are many people involved there in set theory proper. And Cantor is often described as the father of set theory, because he made this proof that there are different sizes of infinity.
The famous diagonal element, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there is this, recently they discovered some letters from Dedekind that Dedekind helped him to formulate this version of the diagonal argument, and Dedekind had a proof that the algebraic numbers are countable. And this together makes that there we have transcendental numbers, quite a lot of them, and uncountably many. And this is like the very, maybe the first set theory paper that brought it into the mainstream when Kronecker accepted that.
About sizes, sorry, I have a little story. It comes in different episodes. So I don't know whether you want to go through it. It's Hilbert's hotel. You know Hilbert's hotel, right?
Yeah, sure.
So this hotel numbered 1, 2, 3, or maybe 0, 1, 2, 3, and there's computer scientists involved, right? And then it's completely full, and then a new guest arrives, right? So what can we do?
We can do two things. If we start with 0, there's still the room 0, 0, with the toilet, which is empty.
That's not this right.
more seriously. And this is the weird thing about infinities. You can tell everybody to move one space further. So 0 go to 1, 2 to 3, and so on.
Okay. I have a continuation.
Yeah.
There is also the Hilbert Bus Company. Huh? And the Hilbert Bus Company has buses, which are numbered 0, 1, 2, and so on. And then the hotel is full, and the full Hilbert bus arrives. Yeah. What can we do?
Yeah, and another really puzzling thing for people in earlier generations. I mean, just tell everybody to move to 2 times n if you are in room n. And then all the even numbers are full, but all the odds are still empty. And everybody can just, and the bus can just take a odd number.
Yeah, we tell the people, look at your seat number, multiply it by 2 and add 1. And that's your room number, right? Now it gets worse. It gets actually worse, yeah. So the Hilbert Bus Companies has buses numbered 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on, yeah. And they're all full, and they arrive. The hotel is empty in this day, yeah. What can we do?
We can do several things. I mean, we can keep the hotel mostly empty and still squeeze everybody in, just go to... The first bus goes to all the powers of the first prime. The second bus goes to all the powers of the second prime, and so on.
But so, this is a bit complicated. I mean, I know this recipe. There's a simpler recipe, which is 1 to 1. Yeah. So you take the number of your bus and the number of your seat. Yeah, and then you interleave in digit by digit, and you get the number of your room.
This works.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
But now I've got another one. Now we come to Cantor. So in this Hilbert's hotel, in the office, they have a list of all occupation lists. Also the occupation list says room 0 is occupied, room 1 is occupied, room 2 is free, and so on. So they have all these, I mean, it's really a big filing cabinet, yeah. But they run out of space in the office, so they decide to distribute the occupation lists onto the rooms, yeah. To put one occupation list in every room, and the guy says, "Yeah, I've done it," but he's a liar, right?
Okay, you want this list of all the occupation to put into every room, or
in every room is one list. So he takes this big filing cabinet and puts one occupation list, which is the infinite sort of assignment. So 0 is empty, 1 is occupied, and so on. He puts it one in each room, right?
Okay, I see. And there are all possible lists in that filing.
All possible lists.
Yeah.
One list doesn't appear.
One is a real number.
No, it's not real, nothing real numbers. No, one list doesn't appear. Yeah, the list, we look at 0, and what does the list say about room 0? And if it says occupied, we always do the opposite, yeah? So we make a list which at every room, for this room, has the opposite occupation, yeah? And this list cannot be in any room, because every room disagrees with the list in this room at exactly this diagonal number. So this is diagonal argument using Hilbert's hotel.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, what I meant is, I mean, there's this trifecta of the continuum, the power, the cardinality of the reals, and the cardinality of the power set of the naturals. And so, I mean, you can see the list as...
Actually, constructively, it's not clear whether this argument works for the reals. Yeah. This argument works for the power set, actually for the decidable power set. Yeah, so that's easy. But I think it's not clear whether it works for the reals, because the reals are quotiented. So you don't. It's not so easy to do the same argument for the reals constructively.
Well, that's true. Yeah, see, and you also have a constructive or a lazy computing variant of the Hilbert's hotel, right? You can look into these arguments and see that they are effective procedures in the sense of you don't need to finish an infinite moving order and then do something else, but you can always already put in people, well, the change room changing process just started.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a function which assigns to every room, whether somebody is in there or not, right? So functions.
But there are different sizes of infinities is probably the main story of set theory proper, right? It's the story of the mathematical field that's not necessarily related at all to its foundational use. It's just the science of infinities.
Yes. Okay, interesting point. Yeah, I was going to get at something else in the moment. So I think Cantor made a cardinal mistake, which is continued since then. Yeah, and that is
yes, fun double pun.
Okay. Yes.
Sure.
And this is that he identified sets with properties. I mean, he famously says he had a sort of intuitive definition of a set. A set is given by a property, right? So for example, if you have a property like being green, then you have the set of all green things, right? But what is a bit left out there is a property of what? Yeah, what are the Urelemente? And in pure set theory, there is this easy way out that we say the Urelemente are the sets themselves, right? We build everything from sets. A set is a property of sets, right? That's the slogan of pure set theory. But now, if you look at this, a set is a property of sets, then that's obviously a negative domain equation. And there isn't a good way to interpret this. And in my view, I mean, or my understanding, but this may be historically incorrect, ZFC is then to cut down this sort of infinite comprehension principle, which any property gives rise to a set, which includes also this paradoxical, the set of all sets which do not contain themselves. This is too much, so we have to cut down. We have to say only certain properties give rise to sets. And that's most of the axiom of set theory are about this, right? There's this pairing axiom. If you have two sets, then you can make a set which contains at least these two sets. What else is there? The power set axiom, the infinity axiom always states that some sets which you could actually construct with unlimited comprehension, but they are actually permitted, right? So most of the axiom of set theory has some exceptions, like extensionality and regularity are of this form and replacement. But the thing is, why, if you want to specify, explain what collections are, collections of things, I mean sets, okay? Then why do you start properties? Why not just saying, I sit down and say what collections you can form, instead of referring to this rather mysterious concept of a proposition and a predicate. Yeah, and I would say this is the idea of type theory, that you sit down and say, here we are, let's form collections. That's how you can do it, right? And then propositions can then be explained constructively by saying a proposition is something you can have evidence for. So for every proposition, we assign the type of evidence.
Right? I mean, this is definitely an interesting diagnosis of how that could have happened. What are the main motivational forces? I mean, I'm no historian either. I guess I would stress slightly different aspects, and I would say, like, if we begin from Frege's problem, where you had like exactly these two types, you are either an element or you are a function, and I mean, more or less, you are a function or you are a set. Who cares? It's like two elements, and we had a contradiction there, so we need to solve this contradiction, and there are two way out. Either you go on top, you say a set of set, or let's stay in the set picture, is something beyond the set. It's like a second level set, and a collection of those is a third level set, and so on. And this is what Russell did.
Yes, this,
and
by the way, the Russell theory of types is not really closely related to type theory. It's a common confusion, as you just said, the Russell's type theory. Or theory of simple types is really a way to stratify set theory, right?
Yeah, and then the other way is just collapse it down and see what can you do if everything is the same thing. And
too much, yeah.
I think this is maybe like the motivation why set theory became what it is. And I mean, the other one is the study of the infinite.
Okay, I would say actually, whether you accept Russell's solution, which actually didn't work, or I mean, there are several attempts to make it work, but basically, Russell's approach was too inflexible, was getting too complicated. You couldn't actually do good mathematics in it. And then Zermelo, by just stating some axioms, like basically saying, yeah, comprehension is fine, but here are some cases where comprehension is actually allowed, is an alternative. It was an alternative. But the third option, which has not been considered until much later, is, as far as I know, maybe I should do more history. I would say Martin Löw, by saying, okay, let's forget all this stuff about propositions. Let's talk about types. Let's talk about collections as the basic idea. And let's postpone the question of a proposition until later.
Yeah, but maybe one slight comment. I mean, as far as I understand, the Zermelo axiomatization is mainly a reply to people not believing his well-ordering theorem. So if you have the axiom of choice, you can well-order every set. And that sounds weird, right? Because a well-order looks so countable. First element, second element.
That is weird, actually. It doesn't just sound weird.
And that's how I just counted the reals, right? We would put them into a well order and count them. Contradiction. Of course, and so after all this discussion, he needed to make, so to speak, clearly what his basis is. And he came up with these ZFC axioms minus one oversight, so to speak, for
replacement. Yeah.
Replacement that was added.
Because in the original Zermelo theory, there is an axiom of infinity. And actually, I think Zermelo defined the natural numbers in a different way than von Neumann.
Yeah, he just iterated brackets.
Yeah, with curly brackets. Actually, I think the von Neumann ones are not definable in Zermelo, right? I'm not 100% sure. But
could be.
Because
I'm not.
You need replacement, because you need to say, here I have one construction of natural numbers. And here you have something else, which are actually, okay, let's say isomorphic. You need a bit less, but you have a relation between them, blah, blah, blah. And then you can apply replacement, and you can prove that the von Neumann numbers, von Neumann naturals are also a set. Yeah. So then I think you need replacement at least to do things like this. I'm not sure about this particular case. I have to check this.
But maybe one tiny thing. I think we cut the story of set theory as a foundation a little short by going right away to the infinities. And I mean, it's just an insane fact that you can emulate, so to speak, all or a lot. I mean, let's not think about higher categories and things like that, but a very ordinary math. You can all emulate that somehow in one shared language, right? And that's the language.
I mean, you can do it. You can do higher categories as well. It's just terribly ugly.
Yeah. But I mean, we are still in historical context. It's simply interesting that you can do all the constructions of numbers, and you build from nearly nothing, or from literally nothing, and one infinite set, and you have this few building operations, and you get to find a structure that looks like the natural numbers, that look like the reals.
And again, natural numbers you put in, right? I mean, okay.
Yeah.
The reals are more exciting, yeah. But you mean, but actually, you don't put in very little, you put in quite a lot. For example, the power set axiom is already problematic from a constructive point of view, from a predicate.
I mean, it's also problematic from a classical point of view, because it's like underdefined. Different models disagree what the power sets actually exactly do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we wanted to make these premises shorter, so we gave some input from different aspects of set theory. But maybe one thing, the biggest question in set theory, or what used to be the biggest question, the continuums hypothesis, I mean, is exactly that the power set is a weird thing, right? It's not so easy to pin down what the power set of something really is, how big it is, how and whether there is something between of the natural numbers and the reals, or the power set of the reals. Should be careful for constructive contact.
Yeah, so the power set often is described as that we have the power of analysis, right? Or calculus, right?
And that's because calculus,
if you want to define
lives,
the reals,
yeah.
If you want to define the reals, you need some form of power set axiom.
Yeah. And I mean, interestingly, Harvey Friedman has this point, he repeated in different contexts, that most of math doesn't need all the set theoretical hierarchy. So I mean, now that we established that we can do power set and get to bigger and bigger infinities, calculus is like one power step above the natural numbers. So it's not that much, maybe give or take two or three iterations, you can do most of math there. And that's something quite interesting, because I mean, set theory as a discipline cares about a lot that comes above. It cares about things that are so large that you cannot reach them with power set and things like that, and accessible
cardinals. I mean, yeah, these are large cardinals, but just go back to the reals. I mean, the reals, we can understand just using functions as a primitive concept, which constructively, I mean, if you don't identify prop and bool, is much much weaker than this idea that you have that you have power sets, which in a type theoretic formulation means that the type of propositions is small. So type of proposition is small if you have prop equals bool, right? Because bool is small. But if you don't have prop equals bool, then there isn't really a good reason why prop should be small, right? But you still can define the reals, because they correspond to basically, I mean, functions from nut to rationals or whatever, which is rather harmless, right? So that you don't at all, you don't even need the first level of power sets. You don't need power sets at all. I mean, power sets in type theory, in a predicative type theory, a power set lives at the next universe. So it's not, I mean, the type of all predicates over a type lives at the universe, at the next universe, where universes actually correspond to these large cardinals.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there are, in set theory, if we talk about these small and big, I mean, sometimes there is two relevant notions. One is the class, which mm-hmm. lives like at every level of the set theoretic hierarchy. I mean, this is one diagnosis. And like versus the class of all ordinals is no set, because of course there are ordinals on every level. You cannot form this. The set of all set doesn't exist because it lives on all levels. It's a class of all sets. And the other interesting thing is, I mean, probably we shouldn't introduce it now, but if you assume very large cardinals, you can somehow measure what's small and what's big on the levels below by what's called an ultra filter, which has like very reasonable axioms. If you add small things, it doesn't get big and stuff like that. And it helps a lot for this analysis, what is big, what is large, which is probably quite a lot of the spirit of set theory. Great. Shall we call it an episode for?
Yeah, let's call it a day, sort of. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we hope that these in-between fillers are better than nothing. Yeah, at least, and hopefully even quite nice. So don't forget to subscribe, to hype, to support, to buy us a coffee. And now you can see what new functions YouTube is donating to our little channel, because we have so and so many thousand hours of watch time, which we really appreciate. So see you in a week, and most likely with an episode with Emily Riehl. So we will learn a little bit on category theory.
Higher categories.
Hi. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.